Today we speak with a man who needs no introduction, former Assistant U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Wall Street Journal editor, and recipient of numerous international awards. He is a prolific author and a one-man revolution, telling the ugly truth in a time of censorship and great danger for those who dissent. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Roberts.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You have recently been writing about the precarious situation before us. Washington is moving ahead with its plan of full-spectrum dominance, which seeks to eliminate, even by nuclear means, both Russia and China. The hour is way too late for us to discuss the basics of this conflict. Either people should quickly educate themselves and get up to speed, or just, I don't know, welcome the nuclear fallout when it comes. Washington is planting their nuclear missile bases in South Korea, Japan, an increased presence in Australia, the Middle East, and Eastern Europe, completely encircling Russia and China. You cite Russian and Chinese officials who are completely aware of the situation, so you're not making things up out of thin air. How far exactly has Washington pushed us to the brink of nuclear war with these missile defense bases and their word games with anti-ABMs, THAADs, and so on?
Well, they pushed us dangerously close because they have convinced, Washington has convinced the Russian and Chinese leadership that Washington is preparing for a preemptive nuclear strike. And of course, this is why Washington creates or orchestrates crises like the Iranian crisis, the North Korean crisis, because then becomes cover for putting nuclear missile bases on Russia's border or close to China's border under the guise that they are protecting against Iran and North Korea. But of course, the Russians and Chinese don't fall for that. And so they also see the constant demonization of them and their leaderships. And they assume that Washington is preparing the American and European populations for war. What Washington is doing is trying to create an environment in which the Russians and the Chinese would feel like they can't really engage in a nuclear war, particularly if we have a preemptive strike on them, that is, if the U.S. has a preemptive strike on them, because of the nuclear shield to stop their retaliation. And because if they were to try to retaliate, they would then be subject to a second wave. So you can see this as an attempt to force these two powerful countries to accept American leadership the way the United States has forced most of the rest of the world to accept that. And because the prevailing ideology is the neoconservative one of American world hegemony. And so this is directed at the two countries who are capable of blocking some universal American unilateralism. The threat doesn't work, the bluff doesn't work, the neoconservatives believe that they can win the war for the reasons I gave.
It has been said that Russian technology has surpassed U.S. technology with hypersonic missiles, and Russia saying it's going to seal off. It has the technology to seal off its own airspace with a Star Wars-type missile shield. We saw the mother of all bombs dropped in Afghanistan, and Russia's reported to have the father of all bombs, four times as strong. At the present, it seems China and Russia are soberly taking heed and putting into place necessary countermeasures to ensure their survival. How do you see their near-term preparations, and where do you see them drawing the line, or where would you see a flashpoint of us moving beyond proxy wars towards direct confrontation?
Well, I think it can happen largely by accident. You know, all during the Cold War, both sides, the Soviet and Washington, received numerous alarms of incoming missiles. They were false alarms, but the only reason they didn't lead to someone pushing a button was that both sides were constantly working to reduce tensions. You know, we had Nixon gave us SALT I and the anti-IBM treaty. We had Carter gave us SALT II. Reagan negotiated the end of the Cold War with Gorbachev. So if you were working to defuse tensions, you're much less likely to believe a false alarm. You don't have much time to make a decision. On the other hand, if you are in an era of mounting tensions, as we have been in which more and more and more provocations emanate from Washington toward these other countries, and you have a very suspicious atmosphere, in which case false alarms are more likely to be believed. And so it's, in my opinion, Washington is behaving in the most reckless and irresponsible manner possible. The whole world should be outraged because the power of these weapons are such that no one really escapes the damage. And yet the world's quiet. There's very little said about this. And this then allows Washington to continue on this reckless path. So you can't tell. If you convince other countries that you're going to attack them, you can't tell what their response is going to be. Do they sit there and wait? If they think the shield that you're building is going to be effective, are they going to let you finish? There are so many risks, and because these weapons are deadly. I mean, they really are massive. And you have these scientists who say if there's any significant nuclear exchange at all, you end up with a nuclear winter. And it just kills life on Earth. You can't, you know, the cloud dust that seals the sun from the Earth lasts too long. You can't plant food. You can't grow. And the whole race or all life dies off. So I see this as the uttermost kind of irresponsibility to take these kinds of risks just so you can boss everybody around. What does Washington gain from being able to act unilaterally all over the world? What's the worth of that? And why take these kinds of risks?
What can we say about Trump, who has been completely devoured and neutered by the deep state, as you have written? Is there not a single soul in Washington with any sanity to slow down the move towards confrontation, aside from a few senators and congresswomen here and there, like Richard Black, Tulsi Gabbard, and Ron Paul? Is there nobody left?
No, you see, first of all, you have the neoconservative ideology of American world hegemony. Then you have the massive budget of the military security complex. It's $1,000 billion annually. That is a huge budget, and huge power comes with this budget. Well, they need an enemy. To have a budget like this, you've got to have a major enemy. When the Soviet Union collapsed, they didn't know what to do. They finally created the Muslim threat. But it's not a big enough threat. And so they have recreated the Russian threat. So they really have to have a threat. And it doesn't mean so much they're really planning to nuke Russia and China, but they're planning to put them in, to keep them in the position of being a threat to the United States. Then that justifies all the expenditures, all the monies, and all the buildups. And in other words, they've got the Cold War back, and the money will continue to flow. So that's an essential part of it. How do you oppose that? Well, we saw that Trump thought he could, but found out he couldn't. They're more powerful than the president. We have a third element, which is the Israelis want to extend their territories. They want to take southern Lebanon because of the water resources. But twice they've sent in the Israeli army, and twice Hezbollah has driven them out. Who supports Hezbollah? Aha, Syria and Iran. They're the ones that provide the weapons, the financial support. And so Israel wants to use the U.S. to get rid of Syria and Iran. Well, this, of course, is a threat to Russia, because if these jihadists take Syria and they take Iran, then the next step is the Russian Federation, because there are many Muslim elements. There's the former Soviet Central Asia, Kazakhstan, and that borders a Muslim province of China. So it's a way the United States can extend the destabilizations into the Russian Federation and into China. So these three things come together in pushing the situation to dangerous levels. So you've got the neocons, they don't like the Russians because they can block unilateral American actions. The military security complex needs the Russian threat. And the Israelis want to get rid of Russian allies or semi-allies such as Syria and Iran. And Russia sees that as opening themselves up to the expansion of jihadist activities. So these are the things that drive the situation toward war.
And you've recently also written about Marine Le Pen as the only one remaining who represents France. And these elections are part of this Washington aggression, because Le Pen could potentially delay EU-NATO aggression towards Russia, because she'd like to work with the Russians. What are your thoughts on Le Pen?
Well, you see, she is considered by Washington evil because it might break up the EU, it might break up NATO. See, if France were to leave NATO at this stage, or to join Britain in leaving the EU, then Washington's control over Europe is eviscerated. You see, if you've got two of the largest three countries leaving the EU, then, and the EU is essentially a CIA creation. They originated it. And also, you see, in the modern world, if you are a nationalist, this means you are a fascist or a Nazi. You're supposed to be for diversity. You're supposed to be for Europe. She's for France. And so to be a patriot of your own country is no longer an honorable thing. It's dishonorable. You're a nationalist. And this has taken on very bad connotations. And I don't know to what extent the French people have fallen for that. Most likely they've fallen for it enough that Le Pen will be defeated. And even if she isn't, it's unlikely that her party will gain many seats in the parliament, so that she might win the presidency but not have the legislative support to be able to actually do anything. I mean, she could be neutered like Trump has been. And if not, I've always thought the CIA would simply assassinate her. So I don't really know that nationalism can make a comeback. It's making one in England, perhaps, by leaving EU. This is a nationalistic action. But it looks like nationalism is basically dead in Europe. And it's represented in France only by Le Pen's party. And the fact that she is in the runoff for the presidency of France shows it has made a comeback in France. But I don't know the size of it. We will have to see on, what is it, May the 7th? That's in 2 days, I think, or 3 days.
Pretty soon, yes, I think. I agree with your sober conclusions on the real danger of nuclear war. I have felt it so serious that as a U.S. citizen, I'm paying out of my own pocket to go to Russia this month with a group of 35 other patriotic and peace-loving citizens. We'll have the great opportunity to meet with Russians and even meet with Mikhail Gorbachev and Vladimir Posner to dialogue and take this knowledge back in the form of a report and film footage to educate Americans and promote peace. Do you think our effort is useless? What message would you give to the American people? You often write that they're insouciant. I mean, what would you tell American people today?
Well, I'd tell them that that their government in Washington is making the Russians feel very threatened because the Russians know they haven't done any of these things that they're accused of doing. And they wonder why they have so many false accusations against them. And they wonder why they have all these military provocations, why they're being surrounded by anti-ballistic missile systems and told that the reason is Iran. And that the sort of demonization that their very popular elected president is subjected to is threatening, and they assume that this means the American leadership is leading the people into conflict with Russia. And I, that's what the American people need to learn. They need to say, look, it wasn't the Russians who invaded Ukraine. It was Washington who overthrew a democratic elected government in an effort to grab the Russian naval base in Crimea in order to cut them off from the Mediterranean. These are the kinds of things the American people need to hear. And what the Russians need to hear is that they absolutely cannot, under any circumstance, trust anything Washington says. That if they trust Washington, they will surely be destroyed. That they have to stay on guard 24/7, because these people in Washington are power mad. They want to have all the power. They don't want to share it with anybody. They don't want to consider anybody else's interests. And that type of a ideology is extremely dangerous to everyone who hasn't submitted. And I'm convinced that the intention is to make Russia and China submit.
And any final thought you'd care to leave us with on your crystal ball for the near future, or any other thought on any other front?
I think when you look for hope, it has to be that at some point the European governments, even though they're all bought and paid for by Washington, there's no such thing as an independent European government, not independent from Washington. But at some point, one could hope that they would realize they're being forced into a conflict with Russia, that even if the U.S. missile shield works for the U.S., it does not work for Europe, because the anti-ballistic missiles don't intercept cruise missiles. And the Russian cruise missiles can obliterate all of Europe, as can the Russian Air Force. So that what's happening is the Americans are forcing Europe into a conflict that even if the United States wins, there won't be any Europe left. So if they realize this, then they put a halt to their cooperation with Washington. This forecloses the opportunities Washington has for these conflicts. They lose their forward bases. They lose the ability to put the ABM sites in Europe. So one, and this I think is Putin's big hope, that at some point even the utterly corrupt, bought and paid for by America, European governments will say, wait a minute, we're corrupt, we like the money, we're scared of them, they may assassinate us, but we cannot do this. This is the life of Europe that is being expended for what? What do we get out of this? We're already vassals, and now we're going to be dead ones? So one can hope that that sort of realization percolates through the minds of those in political position in Europe, and that they simply withdraw from this vassalage and say, you know, we'd rather take our own risk than to be pawns in your conflict with Russia when we have no possibility of survival. If they can realize that, then this can be brought to a halt. Similarly, if the South Koreans and the Japanese can realize that they are also pawns in a conflict in which they may not survive, because again, you know, the Chinese don't need ICBMs to hit South Korea or Japan. And so SHIELD doesn't protect those countries. So if all of a sudden they say, hey, look, this is going too far, it's putting all of our people, everything in the country at risk, and for what? Do we get out of this? Nothing but death, and we're not participating. So there, you know, you have to just hope at some point enough intelligence percolates up. And if not, we have a huge risk of a nuclear confrontation.
Well, we saw in the first Cold War, cooler heads did prevail. Hopefully they do again in the second. This is second Cold War. People can find your analysis on paulcraigroberts.org and really should donate to you and support your much-needed analysis and efforts. Thank you for your time, Dr. Roberts.
It's much my pleasure to speak with you. I look forward to doing so again.